Big Oil Check-In, exploring the end of the age of oil.
The 12th annual Green Mountain Film Festival just closed here in Montpelier, Vermont. It's a rite of spring for me to see 5 or 10 films in a week, which is just a small fraction of what's offered. This year, I saw 8 films, and one of them reminded me quite a bit of our predicament with respect to peak oil. It's called Stranded. I have come from a plane that crashed in the mountains. The film is based on the 1972 Andes flight disaster, where a team of Uruguayan rugby players crashed in the mountains on their way from Montevideo to a match in Santiago, Chile. More than half of the 45 passengers and crew survived the initial crash, and 16 survived 72 days in the snow-covered mountains before help arrived. One of the ways the film reminded me of our predicament is a sudden, completely unexpected change in the passengers' lives. They were mostly 19-year-old male university students who had led privileged, urban lives. They were playing in the cabin, tossing a rugby ball back and forth. For a while, they were so comfortable flying miles above the earth that they threw themselves from one side of the cabin to the other, trying to get the plane to lurch sideways in the air. Even when the turbulence in a snowstorm caused the plane to buck suddenly, their first reaction was to yell, "Olé!" Then, as the plane fell a couple hundred yards, they grew very quiet and feared they were all about to die. The right wing was clipped off by a peak, and it knocked off the tail as it left the plane. Then another peak clipped the left wing, and the fuselage hit the ground and slid down a steep slope before coming to a rest. The plane was in a narrow Andes mountain valley at around 12,000 feet. In mid-October, it was technically early spring, but at 12,000 feet, everything was snow and ice. Cold. The survivors were initially dazed by the shock of the crash, by their injuries, the death of their friends and loved ones, and the sudden transition from a high-altitude party to an alpine survival challenge. They took care of the wounded, hauled the dead to a common area away from the aircraft, and made makeshift sleeping areas in the cabin. They had no formal leadership, but the captain of the rugby team, unofficially, became their leader. One of the survivors commented on the captain's gentle leadership. His way of giving orders was to say, "Would you help me with this, please?" Another survivor said it was surreal how everything changed. They were suddenly in a place where money was just paper, and water was something you had to make by melting snow. They had no fuel source. Or if there was any remaining aviation fuel on the aircraft, they didn't have a stove to burn it in. John Michael Greer, author of The Long Descent, foresees for our civilization what he calls catabolic collapse. Basically, it's a society based on recycling out of necessity. Generations in the future will be taking apart the stuff we've made and using it to make stuff they need, rather than mining raw materials that will be available in vanishingly small quantities, or which will require more energy or technology than is available then. In the Andes, the survivors used suitcases and blankets as walls to wall off the hole in the fuselage where the tail was torn off, and they tore out seats to make sofas on the sunny side of the plane. When they sent out 2 people to find help, the expeditionaries left with a sleeping bag stitched together from fabric and insulating material that had been part of the airplane. The ultimate catabolic collapse was in their survival food. Though they carefully rationed what little food had been on board, it was gone before long. After much debate about breaking a taboo, they started eating strips of meat taken from the dead bodies. Without the cannibalism, surely none of them would have survived. On day 16 of their ordeal, an avalanche buried the plane and killed 8 people, including the rugby captain. Yet they kept up the spirit of his leadership. Everyone shared in everything. That included their tiny bits of luxury, like the jug of wine that they doled out, 1 tiny bottle cap per person per day. And it included the hardship. All shared equally. Analogies are imperfect. I'm not suggesting that energy scarcity will lead to universal cannibalism, for example. This flight crashed where no edible plants or animals could be found. Most of us are surrounded by plants and animals. and the survivors were able to re-enter the world of 1972, where rescue helicopters had fuel to fly them back to the civilization they had known before. When real energy scarcity hits, helicopters won't be available to most of us. What the story of those rugby players who crashed in the Andes has in common with what some people foresee for us is that people who are used to having food, water, clothing, shelter, medical care, everything provided for them, suddenly found themselves on their own for those things. They are able to bind together in a survival team that made it through a plane crash, numerous blizzards, freezing cold, and being buried alive in an avalanche, with no previous training. In fact, for many of them, the crash was their first experience of snow. They defied odds and came through alive. The survivors' courage and resourcefulness show what we can achieve when we work together. Times are tough now, and tougher times are probably ahead, but each of us can build a survival team with our neighbors. I'm Carl Etnayer, and that's this week's Peak Oil Check-In.
Peak Oil Check-In was produced by Relocalizing Vermont Productions in association with WGDR Plainfield.